Well, good morning, church. How are we doing? Good. Surviving a little bit of heat, not too bad, though. I am excited. We are in our second week of the sermon series, It's Time. And the reason it's called It's Time, all of us face change, and it comes in different ways. Sometimes we are looking forward to the change. Maybe some of us during summer we've moved. Maybe we've just moved new here to Fullerton or surrounding communities. Or maybe we've gone through some other transition. Maybe it's sent a kid off to college. Or maybe we have a kid going into high school for the very first time, middle school. Or maybe we're just sending our kid kindergarten for the very first time and our families are changing. Or maybe some of us have experienced some change that's just really difficult. Maybe some news, maybe terminal illness, or maybe something, cancer, something that the doctor drops on us. Some of us are going through changes in relationships, and maybe some of us are struggling, and maybe marriages are falling apart, and so there's change all around us. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's unexpected, and sometimes it's very, very difficult. But how we handle it is matters of life and death. How we handle it is matters of what happens in eternity. So this week, we're going to look at one aspect of change. There's an aspect of change that we all have to be prepared for. Sometimes we see it coming and sometimes we don't. This got me to think back when I started first playing football and was playing and a lot of other guys had been playing. They were more seasoned than me. And so I came onto the team. And everywhere was rook, you know, I was rookie. And so I was coming in, and everything during this season, I wanted to pay, just everything was new to me. And so I wanted to make sure I didn't miss a single word that the coach was saying. So I was on the kickoff team, and we were going, and the ball was being, you're practicing, if you're not a football guy, the guys run down, you have a kicker, he kicks the ball, and then there's 10 other guys that are running down, and you're all trying to smash one guy with the ball. But in what you're trying to do, you're trying to get down to that point from A to B as fast as you can. Now, you might see it on TV where everyone's colliding, but the majority of everyone's got different roles. Now, some people, it's their job to blow up. That's called the wedge. And their job is to blow that up. But a lot of other guys like me, I wasn't the big bruiser guy. I was more of the skinnier guy and the fast guy. So my job was to just try and weave and not make any contact and get down from A to B as fast as I can. If I get into blocking's not my strength, I'm going to slow down and miss the target. So coach is saying, all right, you strikers, you guys are coming down. You have to avoid contact at all costs. And so we're practicing this drill, and there's a guy with a big pad, and we're supposed to run full speed and then change direction and get right around him. And now we're taught, as you're going, you run, you stay skinny. As you get right past your blocker, you get around him and stay skinny. And he's yelling, blockers, don't hit the runners. Like, we're just going through. I want them to get their path. And so everyone's going through. I see them, you know, they run towards the target. They run right around him, stay skinny, get by him, no problem. I'm running, so I'm getting called up. I'm running right by him. And he's yelling, don't hit the blockers. I'm running. And I get right by him. And next thing I know, boom, I'm flat on the ground, almost knocked out cold. And I look up, and I'm like, what just happened? He goes, welcome to the team, Rook. And I'm just sitting there, I'm like, oh. And I mean, this guy just knocked, like, some of my buddies said, I went flying. Just like, because I'm running full speed, and I'm not expecting him to hit me. But as I knew something, because I'm hearing the coach yell, don't hit anybody. And as I'm kind of ripping right around him, I see him just in the corner of my eye, and I said, I shouldn't have been so naive. I know coach said don't hit him, but man, I got just pummeled. I was just sitting there, and he was like, all right, rookie, come on. And so I knew, I learned an important mistake I made there. Always kind of be ready for change. So I was ready for everything, but wasn't ready for that. But some of us, we go through other change, and it's maybe sometimes we, in life, I was fine, I got back up, I'm here today. Some of you are like, that explains it, Pastor. That explains, you got rocked a little too hard on that hit. But sometimes, seriously though, we don't get back up in life. Sometimes it takes a lot longer. Sometimes we get hits in life and we stay down for a while. And sometimes we're down for a season. And so if you're here this morning, I want you to know this word is for you. If you're in a good season of change, this word is for you. If you have change coming up, this word is for you. If you're not in a season of change and everything's good, change will come, or you need to walk somebody else through change. And so you need to hear this word, not just for you, but for somebody else. So we're going to look at three things this morning that will help us through change, and that we need to be aware of, and that we need to prepare for, and then how do we respond? So first, if you're taking notes, go ahead and pull these out. I'd love if you would take these and write them down and just put them on your heart this week. The first thing is, change puts stress on the system. When change happens, you and I have more stress on our systems, on our lives, on the way everything goes. Now, anytime you have change or stress on a system, that it's like if you're used to, have you ever driven somewhere where maybe you from work to home and you just kind of go on autopilot? Have you ever driven somewhere and you just like, you're like, how did I get here? Because you're used to it. It's almost like second nature, right? But then what happens when you maybe change addresses? Now you have to think, or if you're in a new neighborhood, you have to know, and if you're driving down certain areas, I remember moving to Fullerton, and I literally don't have to, like, I'm a stone's throw away from here. But I didn't know certain times when school's in and school's out, I might be able to zip down to the church in 2 seconds. But when school's in, all of a sudden, it's like, I'm sitting there 15 minutes in traffic, and I'm like, this is like a 2-minute drive. I didn't know. And the change, if we're not prepared for it, it happens. And what does change do? Change puts stress on the system. Some of us are going through this change, new baby in the house, or maybe it's stress at work, and all of a sudden you notice now you're yelling at your spouse, you're yelling at your children, because why? There's stress on your system. It changed maybe at work, and so now it puts stress, and now you're more prone to snap, which really leads to the second point is this: a stressed system is vulnerable to attack. A stressed system is vulnerable to attack. Now think about this: when you are stressed in life, real stress, the doctors say that stress lowers kind of the defenses of your immune system. Have you noticed that? Sometimes when you're more stressed, you're likely to get sick. And so when your immune system's suppressed, you aren't able to defend yourself against attacks. So a stress system is vulnerable to attack. So change presents stress, and then if you have stress in your system, you're now vulnerable to attack, to being attacked. We're going to look at a story this week, a wonderful story. We could look at hundreds of stories in the Bible, but we're going to look at one specifically. We're going to look at the story of Joseph. And in the previous weeks, we've dabbled a little here and there about him. I'm not going to read the entire chapter here for you today, but get out your notes. Homework, school's about to start. Homework assignment for you this week: Genesis 37 through 50. Write that down. And I encourage you could split it up to 2 chapters a day, about 15 minutes a day, read through it, and hear the story. The story has, if you're new to the Bible, it's a great place to start. We've got in our pews right in front, we call them the big blues in the pews. Grab one out, make sure it's not the hymnal one, but it says Holy Bible on it, Bible on it. Grab that. That's our gift to you. Take that home. Read it. Genesis is the very first book in the Bible. And so 37 is the chapter. Go there. There's this story. Now, if you've grown up in church and you know kind of the patriarchs of our faith, you have Abraham. Some of us grew up singing Father Abraham. You have Abraham. Then there's Isaac. And then there's Israel, who his name is changed to Jacob. Now, Jacob has 12 sons. One of his sons is named Joseph. So we're going to enter into the story of Joseph. Joseph is actually really loved by his father. He's loved by his father, and in fact, some of us have heard this, whether we've grown up in church or not, but Joseph gets a gift from his father. He gets this coat, this multicolored coat, and in a time where textiles weren't abundant, but he has all these wonderful and beautiful colors, and so now he gets this beautiful coat that his dad gave him, and what do you think all the brothers began to think about him? they started not to like him. Look what it says here up in your notes, Genesis 37, verse 4. When his brothers saw that their father loved him, speaking of Joseph, the son, loved him more than any of them, they hated him, and they could not speak a kind word to him. Any of us can relate. Maybe some of our family relationships aren't going so well. Maybe marital relationships, there's tension there. Joseph was there somewhere. There. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him. Do you know, as human beings, we are social creatures. And so we're always looking kind of for approval. We're looking to be included. So imagine Joseph. He's got his brothers, his family, his loved ones. In his home, where it's supposed to be a safe place, he's hated. And so now anytime his father shows him more love, imagine he's probably going to be more embarrassed. So his father wants to just love him. And now that's going to alienate him even further away from his brothers. So they never even said a kind word to him. So the only kind words he hears is from his father. And that probably creates more pain in his life because he knows that makes his brothers even angrier. Imagine that. No, your brothers are there and you're never getting any love or support from them, only hatred. And then dad says something nice and all you see is scowls in the background. So imagine the loneliness that Joseph is going through, the pain he's going through. And then it gets worse. Joseph is there. He's told by his father Jacob, go find your brothers. They're off far away. Go find them as they're working. And so Joseph's going off to find his brothers. And then it says this line, if we could pull it up. Verse 9. Well, do we have it? The one we added in? It's coming. Here it is. Here comes that dreamer. So Joseph is coming in, and it says this, 19, excuse me. Sorry, Sarah, I confused you, saying 9. You're like, I don't have 9. Joseph's coming in, and his brothers are all there, and then what they say when he says, here comes that dreamer. Now, let me explain this. Joseph, to make matters worse, Joseph is loved by his father Jacob. And then Joseph begins to have these dreams from God that he is going to be this one that people are going to bow down to them. He doesn't have one dream, but two dreams. And so he shares these dreams with his brothers. And so then his brothers are offended because they ask him, they say, so you're telling us that someday we will bow down to you. And Joseph's just saying, that's what the dream's saying. I don't know, but I'm just telling you like it is. Now, here's the thing. If I could use an analogy here. A rubber band. God has Joseph here, and he calls, and this is all of us in our life. He's calling Joseph. He begins to give Joseph. Joseph's already hated, so there's tension in the family, right? And then God says, hey, Joseph, someday other people are going to bow down to you. They are going to serve you. And this is clear as day. Joseph, God is telling Joseph these things. And so Joseph begins to say, well, God is calling me this way. But then the tension in the family has increased. God says, this is what's going to happen. Things did not get easier for Joseph. They got more difficult. Because look, they now not only hated him and not shared, they didn't share a kind word with him, but now they said, here comes that dreamer. Here's the one sharing, oh yeah, God's calling him over here. Here's that dreamer. And they said to each other, come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. You thought your family was messed up. They're plotting to kill Joseph. Here they are. Now Reuben's kind of the nice guy in the family. He says, hey, how about we throw him in this hole instead of kill him right now? We'll say when he's down here, we'll get him in this cistern. We'll leave him alone. Let's not actually kill him. Let's just let him die out. So all the brothers agree to it. They head off. He had planned to come back. But then there's always one brother that goes like this. Judah, he says, wait a second, guys, wait a second. We let him die. Okay, no more. dad's favorite's gone, so be it. So not only does he say, let's get rid of her brother, he says, that doesn't do us any good. We need to profit from this. So he says, instead of kill him, let's sell him off to the Ishmaelites. So instead of just killing him, we're going to send him off, sell him for slavery, and we cash in. So all the brothers like, duh, like, why didn't we think of this? Let's get rich. So they sell him, not to the Ishmaelites, but they sell him off to the Midianites because they're passing by. So they sell him. Now Joseph, now imagine the tension. He knows his brothers hate him. Not a kind word. God calls him. Everyone's going to serve him. And then his brothers want to kill him. And then now they still want to kill him. And now he's sold off for a few dollars. He's sold off his life. He now realizes his life is worth a few pennies. Imagine what Joseph is feeling. And then the story gets on. Those slave owners didn't even want him. They sold him off to Pharaoh. And so Pharaoh had an official named Potiphar, and they bought him, and so he began to work for Potiphar. So he's just being passed around. Yet the scriptures say this, which is so fascinating. It says this in verse 2. The Lord was with Joseph. In chapter 39, verse 2, it says, the Lord was with Joseph. Joseph was in all of these difficult times. He went through all of this difficult pain, and yet God was still with him. Amen. Preach. You're good. So here's the thing. Joseph is going, and this is where you and I have these experiences. We have these sometimes visions, these dreams. We're here, we're worshiping God, and we hear that God is with you. So God is with him in the beginning of chapter 39, and then it goes on, and it goes on to say that God is with him, but then he gets thrown into prison, and then he goes through all of these difficult times, and then things get even worse for Joseph. So here you have to imagine, God is with Joseph, and then here's where things get worse. Joseph works for Potiphar. He's Potiphar's slave, and so he does whatever Potiphar says. And then Potiphar's wife starts to get attracted to him. And in fact, Potiphar's wife, when Potiphar's out, says, Joseph, you are my slave. He said, come to bed with me now. And so Joseph, he's maybe around 18 or so, 17. And he's now presented, imagine this, here's this man, probably this beautiful woman, he was a high up official, so here she was a powerful woman, and she tells him, you have to come to bed with me. And so now he's got this decision to be made. He has to decide, does he disobey his boss, or does he now disobey Potiphar's wife? So what does he do? And he knows, as the scriptures say, he knows his God calls him not to sleep with this woman. So he's presented with this. And then what does he do? He does the right thing. He is tempted, because when there's stress on your system, he's presented with temptation. And here's what the scriptures say. 1 Peter 5:8 says this, be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. When you are going through stressful times of stress, you are more prone to attack. So the lion, be alert and of sober mind. Be aware, your enemy knows when you are stressed, when life is tough, you will be tempted, and that's when the enemy wants to attack. Because why? So many things in life that the enemy tempts us with, God doesn't tempt us, but the enemy tempts us with is to try to ease that tension. Now, God calls Joseph, I'm going to call you to a great work. And so there's tension. It's never been easy for Joseph. Yet what the enemy often does, says, well, just, you deserve this. Yeah, go ahead and sleep with Potiphar's wife, life will be easier, you will be happier. That's the way a lot of our temptation is. Maybe, I don't know what it is for you, but you might be in stress. And what is your thing to make life easier? Is it food? Is it maybe substances, alcohol, drugs? Is it shopping? Is it living maybe in a fantasy world, trying to escape from reality in order to make life easier? So do you try to ease that tension? Because when there's tension, that's when the enemy wants to strike. If one of you were to come and to begin to pull on this band when it's already pulled tight, it could easily break and snap, cause pain. And so when there's tension, that's when the enemy is prone to strike. Yet there's a little concept that Joseph got that I think we often fail to realize. And look with me here, because here's the next scene that happens. Joseph, he's presented with this tension. Does he lay back? Does he literally go to bed with Potiphar's wife and just enjoy himself? But he says no. He stands up for what God has called him to do. He honors Potiphar. He honors Potiphar's wife. And then Potiphar's wife, when he says, "No, I will not sleep with you," she even tries to grab him, grabs his coat. He runs out and she has his coat. And then she blames him and says, she's embarrassed because he's ran from her. And so she has the coat and says, "Joseph tried to rape me." So Joseph does the right thing, and where does that land him? Jail. Joseph is thrown in jail for doing the right thing. And then the story gets even worse. Joseph has a buddy in jail, and they're in jail together, and he helps his buddy with the dream, and then Joseph tells him, "Hey, if you ever get out, remember me." His buddy gets out and doesn't remember him. Years go by. His buddy forgot about him. Joseph did the right thing, and yet his situation doesn't look like it. That leads us to our third point, if you're taking notes. An attack doesn't mean defeat. An attack does not meet defeat. Too often in our lives, we look at our circumstances and have those determine our situation. We have our circumstances determine how we are doing in our relationship with God. Yet Joseph did the right thing and he found himself in more trouble. You will find yourself obeying God, following Jesus, doing the things he's called you, and that will make you different in this world. Sometimes you will get neglected for that. Sometimes you will look at how could you be a Christian and follow these things. Jesus does not promise your life will be easier. He does not promise that things will go well. The enemy will try to attack you during these times. And in fact, he knows that the tension's already tight and the enemy just wants to make them tighter. What does the enemy want to do? He wants to get you away from God. He wants you to follow your own pleasure, your own desire to make life easy. Yet God's calling Joseph to a great thing. Do you know God ends up using Joseph? He was thrown in prison. He went through all this pain, all this suffering. God uses Joseph to interpret a dream. He calls him to a high position, and then God gives him another vision, saying there will be 7 years of prosperity followed by 7 years of famine. Now, Joseph, you must store up in this time, during this time of abundance, you must store up so you will have food for these 7 years of famine. Joseph does as God says, and then throughout this time, the whole nation, everybody comes to Joseph during this famine in order to get fed. Because Joseph listened to God, and God used him through that tension to save so many different lives. And in fact, look at this towards the very bottom. It says this, Genesis 50. He's standing before his brothers, and actually the vision, the dream is coming to reality. Because go and read the story. It's incredible. Back and forth, Joseph weeping over his brothers. It's such a wonderful story. But they're here, his brothers are in front of him, begging for food, essentially. And so he's here before them, and they're weeping because they end up finding out who Joseph really is. And so there's this moment, and they feel so sorry for having sold him into slavery. And then Joseph uses this line here. He says, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. God called Joseph in that tension to save many lives. I'm wondering for some of you, God has you in a tension. He has a great plan for you to impact other people's lives, to actually help save people, maybe bringing them to church, bringing them so they hear life-changing news, maybe being in their pain, in their suffering, in their season of transition, so that you could bring hope, life into their light, into their lives. Yet maybe you've backed out. Maybe you've stepped off, you've let your foot off the gas because it was tough, because it was challenging. But here's the thing. Here's the greatest story. The greatest story here isn't just the fact that Joseph ends up by being obedient to God, being, you know, resisting temptation. All these things are great things. He ends up saving a nation by taking care of them and feeding them. Incredible things. But do you want to know something even more incredible? Look at this here in verse 21. During this time, Joseph knew this. But while Joseph was there, where's there? The Bahamas? Yeah, retirement? He's made it? No. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. One of the greatest parts of this whole story is that Joseph understood that God was with him. Even in prison, God was with him. And did you know how we know this? It's because when he's facing temptation, it says this, that he's facing it verse 9, the second part. He asked this question, if it's there on your notes: how could I sin against God? Joseph understood if he slept with Potiphar's wife, he would not only be sinning against Potiphar, but he would be sinning against God. Now, here's the reality that Joseph understood. He understood that God is always with him. In the challenging times, in the difficult times, in the tension, he understood that God is still present. Now, here's the thing. Some of us were taught at a young age, God's like the big brother. Big brother's always watching you, so don't sin. You know, like Santa Claus, always watching you. Better find out who's naughty or nice. So God is always watching. But there's an aspect that Joseph understood, that the enemy says, hey, why don't you let off the gas? Why don't you enjoy Potiphar's wife? But Joseph knew, no, God is with me, and that is something more sweeter than anything this world can offer. What's being offered to you? What's being presented as enticing that isn't God? Because the thing your soul longs for most is God himself. And God was with Joseph even in the most difficult pain. And so Joseph understood this. He said, how could I do a terribly wicked thing and sin against God? He was very aware of his presence. He says, I don't need this thing that is just fleeting. Yeah, it might be great for a few seconds, but God, being with God, provides eternal joy. Now here's the thing. Joseph did an admirable thing, didn't he? He stood up, he did what's right, he didn't sleep with Potiphar's wife, God honored it, he trusted him, he trusted that God's with you, and so some of you are being called to that. You're being tempted right now. There's something maybe going on at work, in your homes, maybe it's on your phones, something's going on, and the enemy's tempting you. And you need to stand up and do the right thing, because lives are at stake. Your family's lives are at stake. People in your community, where you work, where you live, where you play, their lives are at stake. And you need to do the right thing. But if you're like me and like all of us, there have been times where we did not do the admirable thing. We didn't stand up for what's right, and we knew the wicked thing that we did was a sin against God. Do you know the hope in this story? Is not only that God was with Joseph. Think about this. Think about the mercy that was shown to the brothers. If we could pull up chapter 50, verse 2 again, that he says this here. He says, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. As we were singing that song, Reckless Love, that God, Jesus would walk up any mountain as he walked up Calvary to go to the cross, that Jesus sacrificed so that you and I would live. God made a whole plan, friends. He worked through Joseph's life. Yes, Joseph honored God, but who, all of the 11 brothers, or 10 maybe, that had really sinned against God and they wanted Joseph dead. Yet God made a plan. He devised a plan so they would receive mercy. Maybe you're a brother. You've made some wicked plans. Yet God has made a plan to show you and me mercy. So whether you're in the season of temptation or a season knowing that even in your mistakes, God has made a plan to bring salvation to you. I need you to know this morning that God is with you. It's the whole story of our scriptures. In the beginning of the Gospels in the New Testament, about three-fourths of the way through, you have the beginning of the Gospel of Matthew, and it says this promise here. It says this. It says, speaking of Jesus, they will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. At the beginning of that gospel, at the beginning of his life, God will be with us. When he left, Jesus' promise in the Great Commission is, surely I will be with you always. Jesus promises to always be with you. In your notes, see it there. There's Hebrews 13:5 that says this. It says, never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. God promises in Hebrews 13:5. Five, in the original Greek, it's like five negatives. Not never will I leave you, nor not never will I forsake you. If we could show it on the screen, Hebrews 13:5, right under point number three. That God, five different times, I mean, there's no other promise like this. That's just so incredible in the original language. We don't say that in English. But it's not never will I leave you, nor not never will I forsake you. God says, I need you to understand something. I don't know what pain you're going through. I don't know what change or transition. Maybe it's good, but maybe it's challenging. I need you to know that God promises. He makes it so clear in just a few words, five negatives. I need you to know, no matter what, even if you've made mistakes, because I devised a whole plan to show mercy to the brothers that wanted to kill their own brother. Or maybe you're in this season of temptation. I need you to ask yourself, when you're facing temptation, to ask yourself this question. Do I believe that God is for me? Or do I believe that God is against me? Because you will find yourself, if you feel like God has put you and you're angry, and it's okay to be angry and confused, but when you're asking these questions, God, how could you do this to me? And why is okay too? There's plenty of times for why. We talk about that here a lot. But sometimes the more helpful question is to say, do I know that God is with me in this moment? Pulling from another pastor is this, says this, paraphrased, do we know that God is with us? In these, let me break it down and make it personal here. In this example, let me read a few of these. Some of you might find yourselves in these situations where the bills keep stacking up, and as he continued to go to job interview after job interview, hoping to find a job, and we'd come home with no avail, God was with him. She had discovered her husband had an affair and was now struggling with severe addiction, yet God was with her. He was faithful his whole life and his wife left him, yet God was with him. She had been looking her whole life for the right person in her life, and she realized her call wasn't to get married, but God was with her. She had been trying to have children. They had been trying, the couple, time after time with no hope. God was with them. He was constantly overlooked for promotions. Others who took shortcuts and made unethical decisions were rewarded, but God was with them. It seems like their life is consumed with caring for a relative, a spouse, or children. They have no life of their own, yet God was with them. I don't know what pain you're going through, and I'm not, and God does not minimize your pain. Joseph went through some incredibly terrible stuff, but I need you to know that even in pain, God does not cause pain where Joseph said, you brothers, you tried to hurt me. The enemy tries to hurt you, but God takes whatever that plan is and he can use it for good. God works out all things for those who love them. He works for the good of those who love him. Even for those who fail to love them, God shows forgiveness and grace. So in your season of change, in your season of difficulty, whatever you're going through, may you know that God will never leave you, he will never forsake you, and he's by your side. Would you trust him and follow him? Would you pray with me? Father, you're an incredibly generous God. I don't know how you could devise a whole plan for somebody like me. Somebody like us, and we've made plenty of mistakes. Father, maybe sometimes we did not act honorable like Joseph did. We took shortcuts. We made unethical decisions. And what your scripture calls that is sin, our mistakes. We fall short of your goodness. We've tried to find happiness on our own instead of in you. God, forgive us for these things. If you're here today, and maybe you say, I'm done with the past, I'm done of trying things on my own, would you pray this prayer with me here and now? God, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I've made a lot of mistakes. I thank you for your forgiveness. I thank you that Jesus died on the cross for me, for those mistakes. That he died and rose again, that your word says that my sin, my junk is removed as far as the east is from the west, that I'm made a new creation. I believe that you died and rose again. I want to begin to follow you. I might even struggle. I might have some doubts, but help me with my doubts. Help me with my unbelief. And with our eyes closed and our heads bowed, if you maybe prayed that prayer for the first time and want to take a step of faith and say, God, I do believe, would you shoot up your hand as a step of faith right now in this moment? God sees you. Anyone else as a step of faith? God sees you in the back. God sees you. God sees you in the very back. God is with you. God sees you over here on the side. God is with you. Put your hands down. Father, it's not just cliche. Sometimes it might be so hard to utter those words in our pain, that you are with us. Maybe some of us need to be empowered to lend an arm, to put an arm around somebody else. And maybe it isn't even speaking those words, but being the very presence, your presence, when you are inside of us, we can bring your spirit to other people. So may you call some of us out of our comfort zones and maybe call us into wrapping an arm around a friend, somebody in a season of change and transition to bring hope and healing in their life. Father, you call us to live sometimes in the tension. May we know that temptation is coming, but may we know that you are stronger than the enemy and that you prevailed. You conquered death and you can conquer death in our lives. So Father, may we walk in that here this morning. We thank you that you would show us forgiveness, that you would show us grace, even when we don't deserve it. You're an incredibly generous God. We love you and praise you, and we thank you that you are always with us. We pray these things in your Son's name. Amen.